Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back.
Very exciting. I'm Anthony McCarthy, here every Monday with Mark on the Mark Steiner Show.
And of course, you can hear him every Friday on All By Himself. Well, not really, Mark. You have guests.
Every now and then. Sometimes I have to go it alone.
5 to 7 p.m. right here. Of course, Anthony's show and Mark's show is a part of the Center for Emerging Media, where Anthony is our media fellow.
Enjoyed a lot.
Yes. And, folks, we're going to talk about the Oscars. So you saw them last night, and you've seen the Golden Globes before that, and many of you saw the movies that were being nominated, won and didn't win. I saw, I think, most of them and over the course of the last year.
The highest rated Oscars in almost a decade last night. More people watched than have watched in a very long time. Very interesting.
And I think there's a lot of controversy around Precious that won several Oscars. And Monique, who's from here, who gave a very interesting speech. She won Best Supporting Actress. First woman ever to win as director. First African-American to ever win an Oscar for screenwriting. There were a lot of firsts last night as well in that way. We're going to talk about that and what that means. I want to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888, what you thought of the Oscars, what your favorite movies of the era were, why, and why, what you thought of Precious, what you might have thought of Invictus, The Hurt Locker, which, by the way, was featured first here in Baltimore at the Maryland Film Festival, after Sundance, here at the Maryland Film Festival. She was in Baltimore last year to present her film, Grace Bigelow. We are joined by phone by two people who know a great deal about this cultural world of ours. Ishmael Reed, poet, novelist, essayist, jazz pianist, co-producer of Personal Problems, a cult movie classic directed by Bill Gunn, and his book coming out soon. We'll look forward to interviewing him about that book when it comes out. Is Barack Obama and the Jim Crow Media, The Return of the, we are not allowed to say the word, unfortunately, on the show, the Endbreakers. But Ishmael, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you.
And Ann Hornaday is with us, film critic for The Washington Post, formerly with The Sun.
Great film critic.
A great film critic and a good friend. Ann, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I heard you're also at home babysitting. That's all right.
So you every woman.
So you couldn't grace our studios, but at least you're here. 410-319-8888. So, Ann, at film critic, let me start with you and your overall assessment. I'm going to leap into a couple of the films and some of the acting and some of the awards. We can get into kind of the more controversial parts of these the Oscars that are still bumbling about, but give us your thoughts, Anne.
Oh, I was thrilled. I mean, I was a huge fan of The Hurt Locker. That was the one that
yes.
I felt the most strongly about. I had seen it in Toronto. It had made its world premiere at Venice and then was at the Toronto Festival a year and a half ago, and I was absolutely blown away and had, you know, sort of, I started championing it then, and so I kind of feel gratified, you know, that sometimes with these, especially with these independent films, it didn't have a distributor then. You know, there was every chance it would never have even made it to theaters, let alone made it to the big dance. And so I was just thrilled, and I'm a huge fan of Catherine's. And, you know, it's not only, you know, did it go to a woman, it went to the right woman for the right movie, and that was just extremely gratifying.
Ishmael, what were your overall thoughts about last night and the films that won?
Well, I saw Hurt Locker, and I admired that movie. I thought it was a terrific anti-war movie, which probed deeply into why, deeper than the usual, explanations for war.
And that one of the reasons I love The Hurt Locker when I saw it, I think that it did just what you said, Ishmael, and it was also, it approached, I like movies that do not hit you over the head and preach at you so much as they do make you kind of wrestle with things and wrestle with the humanity of people who are in war, what people really go through. It's very rare that you see films about war that are written, could almost have been written by somebody who'd been in it because of the portrayal of what happened there and his going back after being sent home. And that was just such a typical response of people in combat who when they get back after the craziness of combat, can't settle down. And it's so real. I just think the whole thing was just it was a marvelous film. It was incredibly well written. And I think really deserved it. And then, of course, the other film that made headlines at the Oscars was Precious. Now, Ishmael, let me start with you, because I know you are not a big fan of Precious.
I entered the controversy because the people in the sales, who were in the sales behind this movie, were trying to present the people who are opposed to it as isolated crazies, when what I read from African-American and even some, you know, white writers, was that there was discontent about this movie. So what they tried to say up until the eve of the Oscars was that Armin White was a lone troublemaker and crazy, and he was called a contrarian, which is, I guess that's superior to calling someone paranoid, which is what black writers have been called for about 100 years. As a matter of fact, 1905. Description was made of Charles Chestnut, one of the first great writers, African-American writers. So what I found, and the other opinion was that the film was only opposed by angry black men, and I pointed out that some prominent African-American women, including Terry McMillan and Jill Nelson and Melissa Harris Lacewell, writing in the Princeton Professor, were also opposed to the movie.
What was the opposition? I think that's what our listeners are more interested in. What was your problem with the film?
My problem with the film? Well, I agree with Lee Daniels that it embraced a lot of stereotypes. That was his description, not mine. He said that he admitted that there were stereotypes in the film during an interview that was carried in the New York Times magazine section. But he said stereotypes are okay because now we had a African-American president.
Folks, I'd like you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the Oscars last night, your thoughts on the films you saw, what you thought should have been up there, maybe wasn't, and why, your thoughts on who won some of these awards. And I'd really love to hear your thoughts on both Precious and Hurt Locker, because in the community, Precious is a film that I think caused a lot of conversation. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. I was very reluctant to see it because I didn't want to be depressed. When I saw it, I was glad I did see it. We can talk a bit about that and why. And I understand the problem with stereotypes. One of the reasons that, you know, when I saw the film, what was the film that I'm blocking the name film? It just left me just like that. It was right there in my head. The film, The Serious Man. Like, that was also, in some senses, full of stereotypes in the Jewish world. You know, the nebbishy little guy who couldn't stand up to anything and the rest. And I can see, and a lot of the characters were very stereotypically Jewish.
Yeah, but Barbara Bush didn't come forth and say that the character in Serious... I saw the movie, too, that the character in Serious Man represented all Jewish males, which is some of the reaction we got from those who saw Precious was that this was the typical African-American family. And this was, as A.O. Scott of the New York Times said, that it would open up a debate about poverty. In other words, this was the typical impoverished African-American family. I live in the ghetto here, and I don't see many welfare cheats. People get on the welfare, and according to statistics, multi-generational welfare, the kind of stuff we hear from right-wing radio, is rare. But in this movie, we have welfare cheats, and the opinion seems to be that if you know, left to their own devices, or they would, you know, African-Americans would, you know, spend time watching soap operas instead of searching for jobs. I mean, all the stereotypes. And there almost was a policy, support for the policy of workfare throughout the movie, that, you know, people should train to become home care workers, or, you know, train to take menial jobs. So I thought there were some policy arguments in it. And one essay I wrote that this sort of like jives with Oprah Winfrey's opinion about welfare recipients, and I mentioned a episode that took place between Oprah Winfrey and a group called Welfare Warriors, where she invited them on her show only to have them ridiculed by people who said they were lazy, didn't want to work, and all the stereotypes. That's in my essay that was published in counterpunch.com.
Oh, I read that essay. I do read Counterpunch. And?
Yes.
I'm curious your thoughts as you reviewed Precious as a critic.
Oh, I was moved by it. I'll admit it. I was enormously moved by it. And I completely understand Mr. Reed's point. I take his point, and I think it does. I think it does engage troubling stereotypes. And in my own confrontation with that, and my own tension around that, I still, and I saw it twice, you know, just to kind of check myself. And I, each time I responded so strongly to these characters as individuals. You know, I think that, yes, you know, they do hew to some of those archetypes, but they still manage some, and I think this is the artistry of the writing and the performances especially. These are individuals who kind of transcend, you know, transcend the parameters and exist in their own right. And I really do understand Mr. Reed's argument, but I can't deny my own emotional reaction to that film, which was just being profoundly moved. And to kind of deny that or to pretend that I didn't have that would have been dishonest.
And I think I agree. As I read Mr. Reed's comments and several others, I mean, I guess I got stuck a little bit around this idea that I was concerned that people were over intellectualizing the film. And I think I got stuck there in the beginning because, as Anne did, I saw it twice and I had a real deep emotional reaction to the characters, the individual characters. And I saw so many, I went back the second time because I saw so many different storylines that I wanted to explore as I was watching it. The relationship with the teacher and her students and her personal relationship. And I will tell you that I grew up in a very poor family where there were and still remains generations of poverty, not only generations of poverty, but generations of people in my family who live on public assistance. And it has been a tension in our family around just hopes and dreams for everybody. But I have to tell you, I reacted the themes that ran through the movie, not just because Monique was in it, but around incest and the sexual violence that takes place. I found it, and it engaged so many of my friends and my counterparts here in Baltimore around my age and the work that we do in journalism and in blogging and talk radio. It really opened a door to have conversations again that we hadn't had in a long time about some of these family dynamics. But I, intellectually, I agree with Mr. Reed and some of the critics about the stereotypes around men and others. But I tell you, I have to tell you, I had a deep emotional attachment to this film.
Mm. Let me open the phones here and see what our listeners think about all this. And we're also going to talk about other issues about that aren't as deep and as heavy as the one we're talking about, Precious, but I think it's an important conversation to have, which is about The Hurt Locker and some other movies that were in there, Inglourious Bastards and Up in the Air, but also the award that went to Sandra Bullock, which I'm talking about that. I still don't understand why we always love movies where white folks have to rescue black people and why she won it over some of the others. We'll get back to that. 410-319-8888. Charles in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening. How you doing?
Hi, Charles.
Well, Charles, welcome.
Yes, I'm in wholehearted agreement with Brother Ishmael. I question why do we even have Precious, because, you know, when Orwell wrote his 1984, he told us the words weren't going to any longer mean very possibly what they used to be or what they perceived to be. Precious was ugly in that the experience that it depicted is the kind of thing, when I was reading The Invisible Man and I got to the part with a black college professor trying to get the white benefactor money, took him to the black man's farm where he was incestuously involved with the children. And it was a horrible thing because the book was so beautiful, but that was a black reality. But that was a minimal reality. Mm. And here we have, coinciding with Precious, the blind side where, the good white people taking care of us because we can't but so much take care of ourselves. Right. We had the direct contrast with the venomous mother, Monique. So I think we have to be fair. I'm a teacher, and those impressions some of our children, sadly, are coming from environments similarly, but we don't have to dwell on that. You know, we have Helen Keller that was deaf, dumb, and blind, lived to be 85, wrote books, graduated high in her class. Why do we have all this negativism and deficiency? It has to be because it's professed by movies such as you're talking about, and that's why it is good that The Hurt Locker, because we know many people were hurt from the Vietnam War on, with the how veterans were summarily treated when they came back in the community. In closing, gentlemen, you know, a long time ago, Playboy magazine had written an article bringing the Vietnam War home, and it told exactly what we were seeing, how that was a test ground for how black people were treated. And very lastly, please, John Killens wrote a book, Black Man's Burden, as I know. And in it, he says, ever since the black man and the black woman have been brought to America, We can think about all those Madea flicks. He says the white man has been trying to turn the black woman into the black man and the black man into the black woman.
Charles, always good to hear from you. It's been a long time. Ishmael, were you trying to say something in the middle of that?
There's some good points there. Somebody wrote me and told me that Ellison had begun this this incest thing, this black incest thing, but I think Ellison was making a subtler point. What he wanted to draw out, I think, in that Invisible Man was the white philanthropist's fascination with black incest and the sexual predator, which has been a theme in the movies going back to the Birth of a Nation. Except we always say that D.W. Griffin was probably a progressive because he had a white man play that role instead of
That's a new one, Ishmael.
But I mean, things have definitely gotten worse. Ellison, if you read the biography by Arnold Rampersad, you'll see that Ellison worked for a psychiatrist uptown. So did Richard Wright. They both had connections with psychologists and psychiatrists. And I think that this Norton, the philanthropist, that character might have been based upon some of the case histories that he overheard of these uptown guys who were having incest with their daughters. And, you know, Sigmund Freud ran into criticism a few years ago about the seduction theory that he, in his Vienna circle, he covered up incest being committed by some of these, upper-class people in Vienna. So I think the point I made in one of the articles I wrote about this was that incest is widespread.
Yes.
In different communities, religious, ethnic, whatever. And I think Sarah Siegel was the person who produced this movie, although they put her in the background. I think it's probably more incest occurring in her, within her group than among black people.
I don't know about I think I agree with everything up to the last statement. I mean,
let me finish. Jewish people have had to marry within the group for centuries because they've been discriminated against and murdered. So some of them tend to marry their first cousins. Now, if you want to see a movie about that, which didn't start a national controversy like this one, there's a movie called Sunshine.
Yes.
Which deals with that subject. In Budapest, and appeared before the war.
I think that's true. I think that not to get into a sidebar discussion about that too much, but I think that what you're saying is not incorrect on that level. But I think that it's kind of overblown there as it was overblown everywhere else. And I think
looked it up. Okay.
You're not the only one.
I think I'm a crazy character, but I looked
I don't think
up.
You're crazy. I never thought.
Okay, I looked it up. All right. So
I understand. I understand the origins of Tay-Sachs disease and all the rest.
I can't understand why Bastard Carolina didn't begin a nationwide discussion. What was the gentleman who just talked? Was he moved by that?
I was. As a matter of fact, I hosted that film here at the film festival several years ago.
But why do you suppose Ted Turner tried to suppress that movie?
Don't ask me to understand the motives of a.
Yeah, okay, Ted Turner. Someone.
Did you ask me a question, or did you want me to finish the question before you started talking?
Go on.
No. I'm very curious at what you have to say now that you interrupted me. Go ahead.
Okay, Ted Turner, who's buddies with the NAACP, to which Tyler Perry gave $1 million and they gave him all these awards.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Turner tried to suppress Bastard Out of Carolina, which is about white incest, because he said it was too graphic, all right? It was only through the intervention of Angelica Houston that the movie was even aired.
Mm. Well, what do you think? And we want to talk about some other things as well. But I'm very curious about the criticism of Precious. And I understand a lot of, as I said, as I think about what you're saying, I certainly agree with much of what you're saying. But I watch even the Tyler Perry films. I mean, they seem to be of the same formula, each film. But I almost find that much more offensive than some of the stark realities that aren't used as comic relief in those films.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know if you read the New York Times last week about a very controversial film made during Nazi Germany called Juice.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This film was used to set up minority men in Nazi Germany for the camps. As a matter of fact, they played this film for the soldiers before they went off to war, to kind of rev them up. It's all about this Jewish guy who was a rapist. Now, if you look at the Nazi publications like Der Stürmer, you'll find that the most typical representation of a minority oppressed, murdered a male in in Nazi Germany was that of a sexual predator. So you can understand my position where I'm coming from, where they do a whole series of films about African-American men as sexual predators. Mm-hmm. This is some stereotype that not only appears in the movies, but in books and literature elsewhere. So you can understand how this would make me feel uncomfortable in a situation where 35% of African-American men are unemployed, and many of them have to resort to the underground economy. Many of them are tortured in the prisons, like in Chicago and New York, and are sort of like put over or used as merchandise by the prison industrial complex. This is a very dangerous movie.
And let me. You've been back there, but I haven't brought you back in this conversation. I want to get you back in here. I'm curious about your perspective of some of the things that Ishmael was saying about, especially the historic record of how our films and how they play on society.
Oh, I think it's absolutely well taken. And I do think that it was cruelly ironic that The Blind Side, as I remember, when we in Washington, we got The Blind Side on the same day as Precious. So I ended up sort of reviewing them in the same breath, if you will, because, you know, there was a lot of pressure on that story because it's true. It happens to be mm-hmm. based on a true story. And so as discomforting as it is to see that paradigm of the white, you know, as I glibly would put it, the best black mom is a white mom, you know, being the sort of covert message of that film. Now, take that on the one hand, but then you take the truth of the matter of these people's story on the other, and what are you going to do, you know? Elide that. What my biggest issue with Blind Side was, and I think where I contrasted it with Precious, was point of view and voice. Because I think depending on the lens, you know, the lens on which you see something, it's either a celebration of this colorblind ideal, you know, that I think a lot of, especially white America, likes to sort of flatter itself with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you see it through, you know what I mean? There are different lenses to see this narrative through. But the one sort of constant about The Blind Side that I found troubling was Michael Orr's lack of voice. You know, he was really rendered almost literally speechless throughout the movie. Whereas with Precious, it was told from Precious's point of view and literally in her voice in terms of the voiceover narration. And I just think that subtle, you know, a subtlety like that means volumes. You know, it just changes the whole valence of a narrative. Now, that said, again, I couldn't deny being moved by The Blind Side, too, you know, because of just, to me, it was a portrait of somebody's radical response. You know, to deny my own kind of identification with that would be dishonest, and I had to own that.
Let me open the phones again here, and I think that and get our listeners to rejoin this conversation. Ann Hornaday, Ishmael Reed, join Anthony McCarthy and myself here to talk about the Oscars. We've been talking about Precious a lot. We're going to talk about a few more of the films as well and what they ended up saying. And I think that Precious is a very controversial film, and I'm glad we're spending some time talking about it and about The Blind Side. And I think that you know, having spent 12, 15 years of my life working with families and kids, that Precious is very real, not just in the black world, but that world is very real, and it always makes it very difficult to do and touches things because of racism in America. To have it portrayed that way makes it even more difficult to deal with, I think. Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Muriel in Pikesville, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm so glad to hear. I always catch this program, your program, on my way back to work. I'm at a local community college, and I've got to run in here to teach my class, but I just had to get in on this conversation.
All right. I'm glad we made it to you.
Yes. But okay. Back in 82 to 84, I lived in Nigeria. And, you know, what we're seeing or what we saw in Precious is something that I found to be totally acceptable in the African culture in Nigeria. Incest, pedophilia, whatever it was totally acceptable. And to raise your voice or to say something about it, and especially in the position I was in, I was a mere visitor living with a family where it was rampant. You know, there was a wealthy father who owned a lot of land and was a government figure in Chagres government. And, individuals gave them his daughters. And I even had suspicion that, you know, he had a relationship with his own daughter. Nothing that I could ever confirm, but it was definitely something strange about it. But anyway, so to see the film Precious sort of took me back to the acceptability or, you know, how accepting that type of behavior is in that culture, a culture that many of us have come from. The other point I wanted to make is I've worked in substance abuse, human services, and the education field with disadvantaged populations. When I worked in the substance abuse field right over at Baltimore City Jail in a women's program, 99.9% of those women had suffered some type of sexual abuse at the hands of relatives early in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I wanted to say is, you know, despite how ugly people say that the movie Pressure, you know, the opinions people have of that,
mm-hmm.
it was one story of many, many, many stories in our community. Even, you know, in the class that I'm teaching at a local community college, a mother had to drop out because her 21-year-old son was diagnosed with AIDS. And, you know, it's just story after story after story after story of this. And I don't, you know, it's not so much that it's stereotypical, but it is happening. And it happens every day. And I don't, you know, I think one of your guests said that it merely opens up a window that a lot of us refuse to look through because, because...
We have to take a break. We have assigned station breaks. So I have to take a break right here. I apologize. I'm glad you held on. I think that the issue raised is right. There's a difference between stereotype. There's a connection between stereotypes and things that are all too prevalent, and the relationship between the two. We'll take a very short break and come back with Anne Hornaday, Ishmael Reed, and, of course, Anthony McCarthy here in the studio this hour. It's Monday. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. In this month's issue, four teams of collaborators explore four very different visions of the city. It's the Urbanite Project, a special annual issue devoted to showcasing outside-the-box thinking from Baltimore's most creative minds. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. Visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of drop locations. We'll be right back. Join us, 410-319-8888. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are joined this hour. Anthony McCarthy and I are joined this hour.
Great to be here. Great conversation.
It is. Ishmael Reed, we're just wonderful to have him with us. He is, of course, one of the great poet, novelist, essayists in our society and writes some really interesting, controversial work. He's a jazz pianist as well. His book coming out soon is Barack Obama and the Jim Crow Media, The Return of the Endbreakers. We can't use the word on this airwaves, or I would otherwise. To describe the book, that is. He's a co-producer of Personal Problems, a cult movie classic directed by Bill Gunn. And Hornaday is with us, one of our great film critics who writes for The Washington Post. 410-319-8888. So I'm here. We're talking about the Oscars. Before we veer back, I know we're going to get back to Precious. That's not going anywhere. And what Anthony was saying about...
About that woman calling about Nigeria?
Pardon?
Can I say something about that woman who's just calling about Nigeria?
Sure.
There's no Nigerian culture. There are many cultures in Nigeria. There's a Hausa in the north. There are the Yoruba people. I studied Yoruba for 10 years and wrote some poetry in Yoruba and songs in Yoruba and went to Nigeria where I met a number of intellectuals and members of the Association of Nigerian Authors. That was the kind of gross slander that we get all the time, gross libel that we get all the time. And I hope that you'll have some Nigerian intellectuals who are in your town or in D.C. to come on your radio to talk about how rich and complex Nigerian culture is.
We do it all the time. We've had a lot of Nigerian thinkers and authors on the show, and I was a student of Chinua Achebe's in New Hampshire, and a lover of Wallace Yunker's work, interviewed him once. I'm very lucky to have done that. Yes, we do that all the time. And I'm glad you did chime in there, Ishmael, on that. So I think it's we think of a Nigerian culture. There are forming in the urban Nigeria, in Lagos, a culture, a Nigerian culture, but it's still very divided between Igbo, Hausa, and many other nations that live within the borders of Nigeria. On the way back to the phones here, and also talking about the other films, Anne, I want to ask you a question. One of the things that Anthony said during the break, which was, it's interesting when you look at characters in films. Stereotypes is what many films are based on.
Yeah.
No matter what, whether it's the drunken redneck singer Jeff Bridges, or whether it's ahead.
Well, you know, and I was just recently talking about this very issue as it came up with the Hurt Locker, because sort of late in the game, you know, a veterans group has come out saying that they don't like the way that Jeremy Renner's character, the lead character, this bomb diffuser, is depicted in terms of just breaking a lot of rules. You know, he goes off base. He brings alcohol onto the base. He takes his uniform off. I mean, the whole way that the chain of command is depicted in terms of not dealing with him, they find so inaccurate as to be, you know, troubling and getting in the way of this broader emotional truth that I think, you know, rang true for you and myself and Anthony and Mr. Reed, perhaps. But you know, he's a cowboy. And, you know, it really hit me last night when I was watching the ceremony and they were playing the score, which is very reminiscent of the Ennio Morricone scores for Sergio Leone movies. And it hit, you know, and it really struck me freshly, my God, this was really a Western, you know, this classic, you know, cowboy, outlaw, loner, you know, again, the archetype / stereotype that Hollywood and movie viewers are, you know, just seem to be sort of chronically attracted to. And make of it what you will, but yeah, that definitely was, I think, at play in that movie.
And even, you know, even The Blind Side, Sandra Bullock's character, and I have not traditionally been a big fan of Sandra Bullock's, but I will tell you, I found that she reminded me so much of the white women that I grew up around in the South. Ann Richards and those folks. I mean, that whole charging ahead and nobody scares me and I got a gun in my purse. And, a lot of times popular films are built around acceptable stereotypes. And even the way gays and lesbians are portrayed in popular culture and in films, people think nothing of exaggerating affectations.
But we get a variety of films about white life.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
The kind of films that make it to the Oscar nominations are things like Training Day, where you get like a black corrupt cop, or Monsters Ball, where you have an African-American woman who's so dim-witted she marries her husband's executioner. Those are the kind of films that are acceptable to crossover audiences. And this film was marketed to a crossover audience. And if you look at the history of the film and the making of the film, for example, the New York Times newspaper, you'll see that they wrote off the black audience. They said they wanted a film that would appear to white audiences because of The Great Debaters, and about cerebral blacks, and Spike Lee's Miracle at St. Anna did not appeal to the white box office. So they settled upon this film. And when Oprah Winfrey and Tyler Perry came aboard, they felt they were home free. Now, you know, you notice that Oprah Winfrey and Tyler Perry were not nominated as producers, or were not recognized as producers, because it was decided that they came on after the film was made. So yeah, you get some stereotypes in white movies, but you also get heroic whites, like Band of Brothers. You know, African-Americans have complained for years, especially African-American soldiers have complained that their role in World War II has been left out. There were a million African Americans who fought in World War II. We got Band of Brothers coming in. We got movies by Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks, Clint Eastwood, which do not recognize the role of African American soldiers.
Now, I think that's very real, and that's exactly what happens in Hollywood. I think that, I mean, I think, you know, whenever I talk to a lot of actors who I know, who are, and directors who are African American, you know, would say things like, if I don't find a white lead for my film, then they're not going to make it, or it's not going to be promoted, or it's not going to be pushed. And I think that that is, unfortunately, the reality.
I know we have some callers, Mark.
We do
a
lot.
Can I ask a real quick question to Ann about Invictus?
Mm.
I have a friend. And first of all, when I saw it, I have to tell you, I was very moved by it again. I guess I'm a big pushover.
I think you and I both are.
But I have a friend. I have a friend who works in South Africa in Johannesburg, and he just blasted the film. One of the things he hated about the film was that Americans played all the leads.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that there were so many talented.
Africa. God, they have such a great group of actors.
Yeah.
Down there in South. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, yes.
But I guess what I wanted to ask you as a critic, does that take away from the actual? I don't want to say the entertainment value of the film, but the genuineness of the film. Mm-hmm. When you review a film or you look at a film, knowing that Morgan Freeman and Matt Damon, you know, they perfected their accents. But it would have been, I think it would have been much more genuine, that period, that story, that moment in history, that clip that they took and made that incredible film that really, I cried several times, I cheered several times.
Before you can't help it. No, I think that's a point very well taken. And I hadn't thought of it, but, you know, there is, I think there is a fascinating thing that happens with celebrity, you know, with actor, you know, persona actors. In other words, actors who almost can't disappear completely into a role, because you're just aware of their persona, and then the degree to which that performance succeeds is the degree to which the persona harmonizes with the character that they're playing, so that you can be at ease with that, you know. And I think that that happened with both of them. I mean, frankly, I think Damon's been doing some really interesting character
work,
which I would never have predicted. I mean, the boy with the leading man face, you know, turns into Philip Seymour Hoffman. But And I will say, too, that, you know, I will admit that Freeman did disappear for me into Matt. You know, I mean, he just, I got there. You know what I mean? Like, it took me there, and I got into that world. But I totally take your point, because I think Johannesburg has such a vibrant theater scene and such a great, great community of actors there that we saw a little bit in the Ladies' Number One Detective Agency.
Oh, yeah.
Which was my favorite aspect of that film, was just the light that it shone on that terrific community of creative people.
Which apparently we only seem to see these days on HBO.
Mm.
And very few other places. Let's go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. Who's been holding on a while here? Wendell, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Movies like Precious concern me because as an African-American male, my whole life I've struggled to break those stereotypes and to live contrary to that. The problem I have, those movies are shown all over the world, and that becomes foreign people and people in the United States that don't interact with African-Americans. That becomes their reality. And I don't see the point. It does no good, in my opinion. I live in Baltimore City, as I drive around, I see the, in my opinion, devastating effect that culture has had on the current generation of young African Americans. So, you know, and I'm in my 40s, as, you know, my whole life, again, I've struggled to not live up to those stereotypes, and again, movies like that do nothing but reinforce them. It does no good. If anything, that incest and things like that, it should be crushed in the African American community. It shouldn't be documented. It shouldn't be awarded. And if you notice, the depiction of African Americans, Denzel Washington, which in my opinion was one of his worst performances. That type of stereotypes are rewarded, and I don't like it, and I think it's dangerous, because ultimately youth emulate it. And the last thing, I appreciate your show. It spawns critical thinking and intellectual exchange.
Thank you so
Wendell,
much.
Wendell, did you see the movie Precious?
No, I
oh, you didn't
support movies like that with, because I think when you purchase a ticket, you vote economics. Are African, or anyone's most powerful vote, and I don't support things that I think are contrary to how I'm portrayed, because ultimately it affects some African Americans. How you're portrayed, it will affect your promotion promotion potential, your opportunity. So I don't support things mm-hmm. like that. I prefer movies like the movie with Lawrence, Killer in the Bee, the one with Denzel, that portray us in a positive light. So I will support those. But no, I will never purchase the DVD or purchase a ticket for anything like that, mm-hmm. and as well as the movie with Sandra Bullock. Mm-hmm. I will never support anything that does not portray me or people like me in a positive light.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Comments from either Ann or Ishmael before we go on?
Yeah, I think that a movie like that influences public policy. And I've looked at the blogs. A number of the whites, not only here but abroad, have said that this is the way African Americans are. This is a typical African American family. And I think that's very dangerous. And not only does the mother, probably the most despicable role ever assigned to a black woman, even for Hollywood, not only does the mother cooperate with this incest, but the grandmother. The grandmother even seems to endorse these acts. And the perpetrator, the black skin, not light skin, black because Precious in the movie belongs to not only a white skin, white lover, but a light skin lover, dark skinned black male perpetrator of incest. He has no story at all. He's like a prop. No, there's no narrative. He has very few lines. We don't know where he comes from. We don't know his history. So I think when you talk about characterization, if I wrote a character like that, one of my novels would be called one-dimensional.
There's a – I mean, I have all a question here about these kind of things. We're talking about film in this world. I mean, part of the problem is – and I think what we're seeing here is this where the depth of issues of race and poverty in America – are also kind of crossing across, they are intersecting with art and film and the industry. And nothing is simple, and everything gets tied up in each other. And so but the part, somebody could argue, A, that Precious is not real for most people in America, black or white, or any other nationality we are in America.
Well, I think, okay, go on.
But the problem is that because we live in a country that is so deeply embedded with racism at its core, from the very founding of this nation, that any time anything like this happens, it raises the other issues, because we may be confronted with the reality of what that movie portrayed. We're also confronted with the reality of stereotypes that power and money allow to be seen on the screen. I mean, so you know what I'm saying? So I mean, I think that there's both an artistic and a cultural issue here that's pretty profound.
Well, racism pays big money, big dividends. Look at Fox News; they sell racism as a product, and I think this film was motivated by greed and racism in the marketing plan.
But let me ask you a question, Ishmael.
One of the spokespersons for Lionsgate, the studio that produced this movie, said that it would provide a gold mine of opportunity for the investors. That's in the New York Times.
And I think I think that may be true. But I'm saying that there was also, because when the book was written, I mean, it was a very powerful book. I read the book before the movie ever came out. And I remember when reading the book, it was like, wait a minute, I know this stuff is real and it's painful because these kids were my clients. It was real. And putting on the screen, remember, she said she didn't want to put on the screen. She was afraid to put this on the screen for the very reasons that people are articulating why they had problems with the movie.
Well, she wasn't afraid to write that poem Wild Thing that contributed to the hysteria that got those kids sent to prison for a crime they didn't commit, the rape of that Central Park stockholder. Those kids grew up in jail, and she put them at the scene of the crime and put weapons in their hands in that poem. And that poem was the poem that made her famous, because Vice President Quayle read it, Pat Robertson read it. As a result of that poem, the head of the National Endowment for the Arts at the time lost his job.
But you can't put all that on her doorstep, man.
Well, maybe she ought to, you know, give those kids reparations. Their lives were ruined forever.
Their lives were ruined forever. I mean, I think it was...
Yeah, right.
The racism of the criminal justice system in New York City and elsewhere is what did it to those poor kids. I mean, it was just hard. I remember that very well.
She used their real names and put them at the scene of the crime, and put evil, pornographic thoughts in their minds.
Let me return to the phone chat. I want to bring Ann back on a question I have to ask Ann before the end of the hour as well. 410-319-8888. Adrian, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Adrian.
Welcome.
You know, my concern is that, first of all, I would never support censorship in film. So the notion that people say movies like that shouldn't be made, I think I would take issue with. But the other concern I have is that sometimes I think, and I'm African-American, and I think sometimes it's just like with sports, that we want too much from our heroes, from our actors and people like that. We want everybody to be a role model. Every film's got to be uplifting and encouraging and inspiring. And, you know, everything we see is not going to be roots. And I'm saying that from the standpoint that, you know, if people want to have popular films celebrated, then they got to, you know, that's what the People's Choice Awards are about, or American Idol. You vote for who you like. But the Academy Awards, just like the Grammys, is an organization. I mean, it's an award given by members of an organization, and it's the people who are members of the Academy who get to nominate films and get to vote for films. And if you remember Mommy Dearest?
Yes.
You could not have painted at that time, in that kind of time frame when that movie came out, you couldn't have painted a more horrible picture of a mother. And it would have been viewed probably by a lot of people pretty much like the character that Mary played. I mean, these are faster times and harder times. And, you know, we have a little bit more, our skin is a little thicker than it was in those days. But, you know, I think the point I'm making is that characters like that in Denzel Washington's Training Day, I mean, that couldn't be any further from Denzel Washington's real character, his real person, than anything. And so the point is that I think when I look at an actor in a film, I look at what's this person's real persona? You know, who are they as a person? And then how far do they have to stretch to embody this character that they portray in the film? And I think for Denzel Washington, that was quite a stretch, because I've got connections to him, and I know that boy never got anywhere near the kind of a lifestyle that he portrayed in that movie. And likewise for Halle Berry in Monsters Ball. And I would say probably, although Monique said she had some of her own personal experiences that she drew from, she's a comedian normally. And to see her play such a serious, dramatic role with such consistency and intensity, I think is a phenomenal job as an actress.
I think you make some very strong points, Adrian. I think that, it's important to have the discussions that we have to deal with the reality of the industry of racism and race in America, and what things get pushed creatively and what don't. I think you're also correct in what you say about the creative process. And I personally think, and this is an aside, that when Denzel won the Oscar for
Training Day,
I think they gave it to him because they didn't give him for the work that he really did. Because,
like American Gangster,
right about that,
or Malcolm X, you know, but
Hurricane or any of those.
Hurricane was one of my favorite movies of all time.
Well, you know, the gentleman makes a good point about
in the civil rights film. I mean,
the composition of the Academy Award, the people who wore those Oscars. 43 members of the Board of Governors of that Oscar committee are all white. 37 white men. And, of course, in this movie, Precious longs to be delivered from her situation by a white man, her teacher, in the beginning. And 6 women. Now, one of the most interesting responses I got to my article was from a right-wing blog called Red State.
Right off.
And they said they were shocked that Hollywood, which is supposed to be some kind of liberal institution, tolerated a board of governors that was all white. And my comment was that they're 40 years behind Mississippi, because Mississippi has been criticized in Hollywood films for many decades. But among 5 states, Mississippi is one that has most highest number of elected black officials. And Ole Miss is more integrated than Harvard or the University of California, Berkeley, where I taught for 35 years. 14% enrollment.
As somebody who's been,
so you have this liberal progressive institution with these people flying all over the world, adopting black babies and stuff in Africa, that is 40 years behind Mississippi.
I mean, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of the governing board issue. Anne Hornaday, they don't want to get you so quiet here. Why don't you bring you back? What are your thoughts about that?
I have absolutely no insight into the board. I mean, it's everybody votes, so it's when it comes to shove. I think it's specific sort of disciplinary committees do the nominating and then everybody votes. But one,
well, you know, I think
but, wait, Ishmael, let me let Anne finish.
Shouldn't feminists be outraged?
What, yeah, but
about
me,
what? About what? Hello?
There's
only six women on there.
Oh.
Absolutely, you know, I, yes.
White women.
But I'd like to loop back, though, to, you know, one character we're not talking about is Precious herself, which I guess I think what I can't, what I keep coming back to is sort of the empathy. My reaction to the film was just this, you know, there are some movies that, that make you see the world in a different way. And I literally came out of that movie seeing people on the street that, that I think I would have walked right by before without assigning any kind of agency to, if you know what I mean, or personhood to, or specificity to. And I think, I don't know, I just wanted to, I don't know where I'm going with that. I just wanted to say that, that I thought her character was the most powerful force in that film. And that's the one character we're not really talking as, that much about, which I find sort of interesting.
And as a film, I actually said, I did love the way the film ended.
Yeah, and it was a very indeterminate ending. I mean,
it's
sure not
was.
Some sappy, happy, quote-unquote happy. You know, it's, she's got a very, very tough life ahead of her. I don't think it has any kind of false cheer, but I just found her an extremely powerful character, and it was an extremely powerful performance of that character, and I guess that's what I've been carrying with me more than anything else.
And I, one of the things that was interesting, Charles Blow had an interesting op-ed in the...
Great.
The other, Charles is on this program at least once a month, and he made it clear, and I think America needs to understand this, and sometimes these movies don't let people grasp this, especially since we live in stereotypes in this country around race so much, is that the group of people in America with the lowest rate of addiction are African-American women and young African-Americans in general. And we have the exact opposite sense of crack mamas and ideas about all these young black people in the streets using drugs, and it's the exact opposite of in reality.
Well, but her, but Mary isn't crack doesn't come into it. I mean, it's
definitely
a part of the community, and it's a part of the scourge in terms of the setting in the 80s.
Well, there, you know, there was a subtle eugenics message at the end of the movie when Precious is going away with her two children, walking away with her two children, and there was a sign that said new to your pets. And my daughter had to bring that to my attention. It was so subtle.
Oh, we so subtle. I didn't even see it.
I didn't see it either.
It's
wow.
in there.
I saw the film twice.
It's in there.
But wow. you think that was in there on purpose to say?
You know, I mean, this is a right wing movie. You know, this is a right wing movie. This movie goes after welfare cheats and, you know, distorts the picture of the average family on welfare, and, you know, the mother is idling away her time and asks her daughter to help her achieve an orgasm. I mean, it's ridiculous. This is one of the worst movies about black people ever made.
You know, we didn't get far beyond Precious, but
I think that
Ishmael, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt just because we're just run out of time, and I want to thank Anne Hornaday. Anne, I'm going to tell you before we go off the air that I've been just really enamored by your reviews lately, and I'm looking forward to becoming a regular guest on the show to do movies because it's great to have you back.
Mark, it's been a pleasure. It's been great being with all of you. Thank you so much for including me.
Take care, Anne.
Ishmael Reed, this has been the first time on our program. I've really enjoyed the intensity of you and the power of your critique. It's great to have you on the air with us. Thank
you
so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's good to have you with us, Ishmael Reed. Anthony McCarthy?
As always, great to be with you, Mark.
Always good to have you co-hosting. Anthony has to run off. He's got an engagement, but we'll see you later on this week.
Later
we'll
on
be doing
this
show
a couple
together.
Of times, yeah.
We have some interesting topics to talk about. I'll remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. We're going to find out more about Exxon polluting water in our communities and the controversy around it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.